And so we're back again to talk about another French player that, who knows, might go late in the first round, might go in the top 20. There's, you know, different results or, you know, predictions right now. But his name is Sidy Cissokho. I think that's how you say it. But French forward, small forward player, Dave. What, I mean, and I'm going to be generous with my initial offering, but I'll say he might have the upside of a Jaylen Brown type player. But you go, Dave.
Nice. Well, let's just be honest. Like, you know, when you're looking at some of these guys like Derek Lively, like we talked about yesterday, mm-hmm. and some of these guys, Gigi Jackson, and you're saying, like, how do these guys compare to some of these young French players? Like, we love talking about these long, lanky French players, but Sidy is a little bit different, man. He's really thick. I mean, really thick. Some of his stuff says he's 200 pounds, but I'll be honest with you. There's no way this guy is just 200 pounds. He's got to be closer to 250.
Yeah,
I say closer to 250, yeah. Like being kind, because those muscles he's got, I mean, they're massive. So when you're looking at Sidy, you're looking at him and saying, how big of a guy or how big of a boy are you?
Big boy,
that's how it is. Like with some of these guys, is like just because it says they're 6'8 or 6'5 doesn't mean that's truly what they are. You know, like, you've got, you know, you were talking about Charles Barkley just before we got on, Mark. You're mm-hmm. saying that, you know, he's got that Charles Barkley ass. You know, like, it takes a very large person to move something that big. You know, like, I'm not being a dick here, but when you have a big ass, like, it takes a lot of, you know, momentum to get that person off that ass. So I keep looking at it and I'm saying, like, where could this guy go? And the fact is that his defense is the thing that gets me. You know, every single thing I've seen on him with scouting, it says that he can guard 2 through 5 right now in the league. All right. Everything. All the things I've been seeing, all the things I've been reading, and all the film I've seen definitely puts him in that category of being able to guard through 2 through 5. But I don't see him being able to guard right now, the point guard. But next year I do.
Exactly. I
and that's the thing
that.
About it mm-hmm. is that, like, that's a 1 year progression right there for him. That's a small step for him.
He's got the ability to slide his feet. You can see it.
Yeah, and not just slide his feet, but he stays in front of the defender. Mm-hmm. He blocks the shots.
Yeah.
He lets guys go baseline when he knows that he has help defense. Like, he's a very intelligent defender here, and I think that's why.
Sidy Cissokho.
That's why you got to look at him, man. You got to say on a serious note, 6'8", 6'10", 6'11", wingspan, you know, 240, 230, someplace around there, 19 years old. And he's got what I would consider, you know, his defensive mindset, IQ there, right? His matching ability to go and mismatch situations and come out on top, right? And then when he is spot on and there's nobody around, it's money. He is, I mean, catch and shoot. He can sit there as long as he has his feet set. He can shoot all day long. And that's the type of guy that I love, like Jay Will. Like JRE, those guys that can just sit there and get past the ball and just, you know, shoot that shot. And he's around the same size as I would call Jay Will and JRE. A little bit more muscular, not as much baby fat on him as those guys. But the reality is that he's one of those guys that can come in here and impact the game right away because of the way that he plays defense and blocking shots. Like, it's so elite that it's mind-boggling. It's truly mind-boggling that I would consider a top 10 pick in most drafts isn't even breaking the top 20 right now in most draft boards. And it's mind-boggling. This guy is just truly spectacular.
So we have been digging in deep into the French prospects. The one that we haven't really hit up yet is Victor, but enough stuff has been said about him, and we'll get into it as we go. But
maybe.
Here's the thing. We've talked about Rayne Rupert. We've talked about Bilal. I can't ever say his last name, and I don't know if I said his first name right, but there's also another guy that we talked about. I can't remember exactly who, but, like, I should have it in front of me. But my point is, there are so many good young French players, but a lot of them took different routes. A couple of them, one of them, Rayne, went to the NBL, and we're talking about Sidy, who went to the G League Ignite. And
what, different, is Leonard Miller?
Leonard Miller, yes, I believe he is too. So different routes, but multiple people have done a couple of the same routes because we saw Victor and Bilal playing on the same team. So it's have kind of interesting.
Have we ever seen a country inside of the NBA that had that? No. I mean, I truly think that this could be a pick where we see five or six French players draft in the first 25 picks.
Kentucky, like, or North Carolina at their peak when they were getting six players.
I've never seen anything like this. Like, this is spectacular. Elite.
So the question is, how do you look at each player individually without being like caught up? So with City, what I want to say is this, like, I started watching out a few days ago. I watched his 18 and under Team France highlights, right? And I was really impressed with his game. But then I went back and watched his Ignite highlights just before we got on. And he is a better ball handler at his size, at his age, than anybody I've ever seen. Mm. It's reminiscent of LeBron, but superior. He's a better ball handler than Jaylen Brown at this moment, right? And within a short time, he's going to get to the Jason Tatum level. Now, is a shot there?
I'll be honest with you. I kind of, like, in a way, disagree, because I look at his ball handling and it reminds me of Andrew Wiggins.
Okay.
Like, I mean, he's controlled. He's effective with it.
But caboose means he can execute his moves. Whereas Wiggins is like a beanpole.
Well, and I think that's the thing, though, is that, like, if you watch the way that he controls the ball, and, like, you know how Wiggins is always on the borderline of losing control of his dribble? Like, always. I feel like City is that way as well. But the difference is that if you develop that and you recognize that is something he needs to develop, that's something the Thunder can fix within a year in the system.
But the things he does,
to me, like, these are the small things.
It seems like it's borderline out of control. But I've also seen enough to know that if he puts in, like, you're saying give him a year on defense, give him two years on offense.
He's ready for defense
Regarding the one. You're saying give him a year, right? Yes. Where he's going to be, like, capable of switching all five positions potentially and stuff like that. But here's my thing. On offense, he's probably, like, ball handling wise, 2 years away. But what I see him doing versus what he did when he was playing Team France, the jump is significant. Sure. So he went from being more like Jaylen Brown, kind of like clunky, and he to the G League, where he was, like, really creative. He looked like a lot of times he had the ball on his string, and he was doing moves behind the back, between the legs, that were just really smooth. And
his handles, yes, he can.
He looked like he was
the way that he grabs the ball and passes it between thing and without touching the ground. That is nice. That's elite. But the way that when his hand makes contact to the ball, you can tell he's still getting used to that aspect of the game.
But he looks like he made, like, when he's handling the ball, he made the G League look like he was playing against high schoolers.
He's so big, though, that helps him out.
Nobody can get to the ball unless he loses it. And some of, like you said, some of his handle is loose and it makes it susceptible to that. But if a guy reaches, because it seems like he's out of control and he's not, if he gets somebody off balance with a shot fake, that hostage dribble is always available to him from day one. And he plays within himself, so he knows how to get to his shots. I really think he's a lot higher prospect than people are letting on. The thing is, he might be the third or fourth, you know, French player drafted. Maybe the third G League Ignite player drafted. So it's kind of like he's not going to get a ton of attention, but he deserves it. He's really good. Yeah.
And I think I want to, in the coming episodes, man, I want to sit down in the last two drafts and pull all the French players that have come out of this draft in the last two drafts. Mm-hmm. And I want to sit down and I want to understand more of where the French basketball is going, because if we are sitting here and we're comfortable with American basketball as where it's at right now, I'm concerned. You know, like, I just am. You know, I'm seeing the French really take control. I'm seeing Canada really take control. You know, these are the countries that I'm starting to get a little bit concerned about. And
concerned, and I'm excited.
I say concerned about. I say that in the most respectful way, because U.S. basketball is no longer U.S. basketball in the next 5 years is no longer going to be the best country in the world.
Australia is like a pipeline.
Australia is amazing, bro. Like, you know, that's what I'm saying. It's like there's going to be a time period in our lifetime where people will talk about when the Americans dominated the basketball world and how it's changed. and it's turned into an Australian game or a French game or a Canadian game. And I'm okay with that because that's how it's supposed to go, is when people fall in love with a sport. You know, you get all the good athletes going to it.
If you were a French Canadian who lived in Australia, they'd have to draft you.
Yeah. You got all of them, man.
Gotta get this one. Dude, oh my God. What's up, Moani? What's up, Rain Del Rio? Good to have you guys. And we are still digging into all these players as we go. There's a lot of players that we're adding. I've been watching different draft lists and seeing who's been moving up. There's some players who are getting some serious steam. In the past, players who get a lot of steam were kind of like, I don't know. I wasn't always sure that they were the guys that we'd be going after. And then J-Dub. And now it's like, oh, shit, bro.
Yeah.
This is real. Like, we got to pay attention to who climbs the ladder in the combine. And that's really the next phase of what's happening for us.
Yeah.
What's up, Cameron?
Jinx, you yeah. I want to say Ryan. I want to say really have looked into the Iwoma. I like him. I've got a lot of stuff I got to say about him.
I'm adding him to my list right now, Ryan.
But the thing about it is that, like you just said, he started playing at 15. I love young men that start playing late in their lives, especially hoops, because that means there was another sport that was important to them. And it looks like he was soccer for him. So, and rugby. And to me, that's exactly what you need, that type of mix. So for me, that is somebody that I've definitely been keeping an eye on. I love the wingspan, his height, plays power forward, but really in the league of forward, center, and guards, I still think that he could guard probably on a good day a five if he needed to, in that middle of the zone if he needed to cover down. I also think that he could cover up and guard a three or even a two if he needed to. So he's got some great range. So that's somebody that we'll definitely add to our list. So thanks for looking out, man.
I like how you gave us the correct pronunciation for the name, and we're still not going to get it right. Iwoma. I said it wrong.
Iwoma.
There we go. But we appreciate it because you know we need it. So thank you.
Yes.
Dude.
I'm all for it. And then, again, like this goes back to everything that we've been talking about with the players from different countries that are coming to America to play. And it's exciting, man. You know, it doesn't matter where these players are growing up and where they're living. The fact is that the game of sports, basketball now is globally known. And that's what's so important about where the Thunder are taking this. If you think about it, Sam Presti's got two Canadians. But we're represented by seven countries on the team. You know, like six countries on this team. So that's what it needs to be. Like, if you have an opportunity to compete with a large market team, the only way to do so is by having team or players on your team that are from all different countries. You know, whether it's from France, Canada, like, and I think it's brilliant. You know, like, it's beautiful, man.
For sure, it's exciting, man. And watching this kind of all come together, international flavor, and then all of a sudden, the French team were like, what the hell? How did this happen? Well, it takes years for this type of stuff to happen. So I definitely dig you know, going back and looking at the previous drafts. Do we have any player comps that you want to add for City Suzuko as far as game comps, any projections as far as like...
If he develops his hand, ball dribbling skills a little bit, if he develops more of a shoot, becomes more of a shooter, which I think he can develop into that. I think that he has a place on most teams in the NBA as a starter. You know, and I think that's the thing about it is that like, that's what we have to consistently be looking at. What players do we need to be starters and what players do we not need to be starters? You know, and to me, I struggle sometimes because that line for the Oklahoma City Thunder is very different than other teams. And I think for the fact is that if you're a top eight player in the Oklahoma City Thunder, then you're good. because a top eight means that I feel like in the future means that you could start on any team in the NBA, any team. And I look at guys like Kenny Hustle, you know, and I look at guys like Lou Dort, and I look at these other guys that are just, you know, phenomenal defenders and players all around the board. And it's like, how many guys can we get like this? Well, the great thing about it is that we've got guys that we can consider stars or borderline stars, and we got role players. And I think that's the beautiful thing about what we have going on in Oklahoma City is there's not a lot of teams that are designed and built like we are.
There are some, though. And
But I mean, when you're talking about NBA teams that are ready to compete right now with a young core, with a young coaching staff, with everything that they need to go right now, and they're getting what I would consider a borderline all-star player right away coming off the, you know, back from injury. You're getting Kenny Hustle back from injury, getting Poku back from injury. I mean, we're filling this team out now. Like last year, we went limping into the playoffs, limping into the playoffs. You know, like most teams do that anyways, but we were hurting. If we had Kenny Hustle in the Minnesota game, we win. And that's the thing about it is like that's what we were. We were so close to being a position to win these games. So that's why I keep going back to it and circling and saying Oklahoma City was that close.
Yeah.
It's that close. A couple injuries away and we would have been all right. We would have been in the playoffs.
Yo, I'm with the city, I'm extremely susceptible to like whoever we're talking about falling in love with them. I get that. But for me,
but it's because we look at them as an Oklahoma City Thunder player as we're scouting them. That's how right. We look at them.
But for me, like when I look at him right now, I think this is the guy I really want from this draft that I've evaluated up to this point, because his skill set, his size, and the fact that he prefers to play on the perimeter. There are players that are faster than him, probably can jump higher than him. You know, there's other elements like that, but like he really has great lift, and his ball handling skills are a little bit debatable. What does he have there? It's not NBA ready. I think that's agreeable, but how far can it go?
I think he has more ability to start on this team than I would say about 90% of the guys that we've already scouted.
Yeah.
And like that. I look at Jairus Walker as that same type of potential of starting right away. I look at City as the same type of player as, you know, he might not be able to start right away, but he'd be able to develop very quickly into a starter. Very quickly. And again, Jairus Walker is the same way. He might be able to start right away, but he will develop into a starter very quickly. So.
And he would be on, in my opinion, be on a little bit of like the Jang timeline, where in a couple of years, these guys, if they develop to their peak potential, they're going to be very hard to stop. They're going to have great chemistry.
Yeah,
you're going to see them really get to the point where teams have to game plan for them, and maybe they're not the stars of the team, and that becomes really problematic.
I want to bring up something. You know, for me, I've been thinking about this a lot, is with Dort, with his place on this team, you know?
Yeah.
This draft is critical to that, because if we find a player that is in, you know, that power forward or even big shooting guard ready, you know, this is going to make it very difficult for Dort because of his contract and because the fact that Dort is very tradable right now. And the reality is that when push comes to shove, I don't ever want to get rid of Dort, but we have to start looking at this team and how we're going to be able to keep everybody together. And I look at J-Dub and I look at Giddy and I look at Shea and I say, those three dudes, right? I mean, this is beyond us. Those three dudes are the future of the Oklahoma City Thunder as far as our guards, right? After that, you got Chet, obviously, in that forward slash center position, and we got one more spot, you know? Like, Dort, if we were able to keep Dort, I would love it. But Dort is going to have to be okay with eventually coming off the bench if we get that power forward slash center that we've been, you know, longing to have for a long time. And if Dort's willing to come off that bench, then we're the most deadly team in the NBA. But the problem is that means that has to be a hard pill to swallow. And I know a lot of people are like, Dort coming off the bench? Like, come on, Dave. Like, listen, if Dort doesn't switch that that light switch to turning over the page to get to becoming a 20-point player a night, J-Dub will outplay him eventually. It's going to happen. And when he does, it's going to lower the value of Dort's actual value. Teams won't pay as much for Dort. So that's what Sam Presti has got to keep on thinking about, is that how good is... I mean, dude, I watched a video of J-Dub working out the other day. People are like, this player is going to be the most improved player in the NBA. This player is going to be the most improved player. Dude, it's going to be Dort. People are going to look at Dort and be like, holy fuck, what just happened? Not Dort, I'm sorry. J-Dub. What just happened? J-Dub just got sick. Like, dude, I watched the other day. He just threw down this dunk that 90% of the guys in the NBA could never even imagine. And it looked easy. And you're like, dude, if he can be doing that right now, halfway through the season, he's going to be dominating. He put on weight. Do you see how thick he looks right now, dude?
No.
Dude, he looks huge, man. And I'm like, this is it, man. J-Dub is making his stance. Yes, a power forward is what he's playing in that four-guard set. You know, great, works now. And I'm excited about it because I don't think that there's going to be a forward that's going to be able to stop J-Dub. Teams will have to go down to a four-guard set to be able to guard us. And when teams do that, Josh Giddey at 6'9", Shea at 6'6", it's going to be incredibly difficult for them to stop us.
For sure. So, is Dort on our team next year?
All right. Let's look at the money.
And Ryan, before we jump into that, Dave, I want to do that. But here's my thing. I would rather City Sissoko than Jairus Walker. Dude. I mean, I'm serious about that. Like, this guy, to me, is an absolute star in the making. And he's more raw. I get it. But Jairus, to me...
I would... Listen, if I go ahead and got Jairus, I would get City as well.
Okay.
I would get them both. And the reason I would get them both... is because when push comes to shove, you're not going to have a better combo of young forwards coming up. You'll have your time to take with them. It'll be like JRE and J Will. Both of them bring different assets. Both of them bring different things, and you take your time with them.
But, I mean, absolutely, dude. And with Ryan, what he's asking a little bit, though, is about the Wizards really being the number 8 pick being available. And they may not want to pay it because the 15% kicker – on Beal's
would I trade Dort?
Okay, listen. Not be able to.
But. If we're talking Dort for the number 8 pick, bro, that's that value right there. That's unheard of. Like an undrafted player eventually getting a top 10 pick in return in a very strong draft. Like that value right there, I would look at Sam Presti and I'd be like, I want to know what you think about it. If you had the 8th pick. Yeah. In return for Dort. I want to know what Sam Presti would do because that's a value thing that is beyond anything I've ever heard. Undrafted to trading for a top 10 pick. Would I think it's worth it? Fuck yeah.
Yeah, we talked about it last
Fuck
year.
Fuck yeah. I love Dort to pieces, but that value right there for Dort, that's one of those things that you – that's what happened when what's-his-face went over to Orlando Magic, and he wanted to have Ibaka so bad that he traded us Dante Sabonis and
Victor Oladipo,
thank you. Which in turn, we end up trading for, I mean, the whole trade that happened for Paul George was because of that. So if that was the case, we were able to, you know, they were so desperate to get Dort. Like, I want Dort. It wouldn't be just the number 8 pick, guys. I want you guys to be clear with that. It wouldn't just be the 8th pick.
It would be
more because Sam Presti wouldn't allow just that. He would have something else up his sleeve. And that's why when I say that value, hell yes. I mean, like, literally, hell yes. Because Sam Presti is going to squeeze something else out of that. Because if they're willing to give the 8th pick for Dort, you know he's going to be like, I can get more.
That's right. It was Rob Hennigan, the GM Thank for you, Orlando Mwani. Back then.
Man, Mwani, you're always on fucking point, bro. I don't know if you got Google close to you, but you're smart as shit, bro, and I love it.
So, but Dort and Beal would be a really good backcourt, I think. I think Dort would do
Compliment
the things
him
that, yeah,
very
that
well.
They needed him to do. So I think that there's something to that, but we also thought
and
that...
And 15% on $50 million, bro, that's thanking Dort for being part of this team. Like, hell yeah. Give him, what, 6.5, 7 million, whatever it would be, just to leave. Like, that's saying, I love you, Dort. We appreciate you. We appreciate everything you've done for the city. Like, that's why I love what Sam Presti does, man. He doesn't have an issue with signing a player that's been on a two-way contract for a year and a half. Now he's just signed him for the last, you know, 3 or 4 months so that they can actually get real money. I mean, Sam is amazing, man.
Yeah. Some great shit. We talked about it last year with Portland. Like, would we trade Dort to move up? We love Dort. We don't want to see him go anywhere. We definitely don't want to see him in the Western Conference. So I like the idea of the Wizards a lot better. He's going to have a great career.
It's going to be phenomenal, bro.
So is J-Dub. And this 12th pick, I hate the idea of avoiding picking someone because we'd be afraid that they'd be too good in a position where we already have a good player. Like, we're not at the point where we're trying to draft players that don't have the peak ceiling. Like, let's draft the best potential and make them play somebody else out of a job.
Yeah. Yeah, man. My bad, Ray. Ryan, I misread your thing. I didn't see the whole Bradley Beal. Listen, I would keep Beal and Dort. You know, like, I would just keep him. You know, have Dort play more the point guard position. You know, like, I think that Beal is getting close to either being done in D.C. or they're being done with Beal. But the reality is that they've got a couple more years left. And that, what is it? His Supermax contract would be like 300 and something million. So I don't think Beal is going to go unless he signs his contract. And I would definitely, if I was the Wizards, try to get him somebody else to help him on defense. And why not pay a nut for a player like Dort?
The 8th pick is not going to help them make the playoffs unless they land a player that
they've got a decent young core. I mean, they've got pieces to go together that you add a Dort with Beal, and maybe pick up a free agent that solidifies the rest of the team. You could have a top 7 team in the East. And the thing about that is that obviously you can see what happens to a top 7 team. What happens to an 8 seed in the East? So the top 7 team, I think, is a win.
Yeah, and I honestly think with Dort and Beal, like, all you have to do is find a way to shore up, you know, those forward positions. You don't even need an elite center. If you had a couple of good forwards who could shoot the ball and defend their position, you really could find yourself in a spot where you could get out of the first round just by having the right coach and getting hot at the right time. So you got to consider it, but in the end, I think it's unlikely that we trade Dort until somebody else is already kind of like demanding that move. You know, we talk about this.
I'll be honest with you. I think that demanding of the move is this year or next year. And I think the reason is because I think people are willing to pay for Dort more than we're willing to admit to. And every time that we ever talk about Dort and his value, everybody's like, Dort would not get this. He would not get that. But I think the reality is that the reason Sam hasn't traded Dort is because he can't get that. And there's going to be a time that all of a sudden Dort can get that. And when that time comes, you got to take a step back and say, at what point do I say that Dort's $75
million? $85.
$85 million is going to make it difficult for me to sign blank player in the next contract. Because at that point, if you're waiting too long, then you have to start paying out the ass to get rid of a player, because people are going to be like, well, I don't want Dort, because then it helps the Oklahoma City Thunder. They'll be able to sign this player then. But now nobody's thinking about that. You know, in the next year, nobody's thinking about that. They're going to be looking at Dort and saying, this player can help us on defense. And that's when to cash in on the player, especially when your team is still getting there. And say it or not, like, this team is still not quite there. We needed Dort to become that second big-time scorer on this team. That's what we needed to see Dort in this last year, the step. And he didn't take that. You know, like, and that's fine. That's not a knock on Dort, because he's a specialty on defense. But we needed to see that next level from Dort. And I think he still can get it. But it needs to happen quickly if we're not going to get rid of him. And that's just that.
I honestly think Dort will be extremely valuable under the new CBA because the new Supermaxes are crazy, right? So having a player that's getting guaranteed at like $300 million.
$21 million is what Dort gets a year or something like that?
Yeah.
Like it averages out 4 years.
So like if you're paying somebody $300 million guaranteed and you have a chance to get somebody who has an $85 million contract guaranteed that's a good running mate next to your $300 million guy, that's
would
like...
You, would you rather a player like Dort or a player like Clay that's going to take up, you know, a $45 million
per year
thing, or somebody that's half the price or less than half the price at Dort? And you know what I'm saying? Like this
brings
is,
it
this
every
is
night.
What, that's why I'm saying is like the value at eight, if he trades Dort for eight, it's not going to just be for eight. It's going to be other things as well. And we'll still keep number 12. And I think that's the thing about it is that like, that's when we say Sam Presti has to double down on this type of player, even though he doesn't necessarily need to double down on that type of player. He could like more point guards and more guards than we see. And that's fine. Like, I do not care what he does, but when the value is enough as a GM and as a president of an organization, and you're looking at it and saying $85 million, two first round picks, top 10 pick immediately. Like, how can you say no to that? You know, like if this was any other draft, if this was a shitty draft, then I'd be like, Dort's worth way more. But this isn't a shitty draft.
Yeah, it's pretty loaded.
And it's loaded.
You
and
extend
you have
your timeline.
Yeah.
And you might get better.
It's about that time. We talked about it. Look at the Oklahoma City Thunder guys. Look at their time age ranges, right? You got your top end guys. You got like Kenny Hustle, you're at 27 years old right there. Then you got Lou Dort and Shea, right? 3 years later, Lou Dort and Shea. And then 3 years later, you got the rest of the guys. Like, this is on purpose. Like, there'd never be a same rebuild as this again. Like, when we tear down, that's it. We tear down part of the team, the older part of the team, and move on. And I think that's the great thing about what we're seeing. That's why we want to see a couple other younger guys on this team that is from this draft. Because after this, I mean, this draft is pretty good. Next year's draft, they've got really top-end talent, but after that, it's going to be weak. Following year, again, same thing. They'll have 2-3 picks that are good week after that. So if we know that going in there, and I say week at the slots that we'll be picking at, like that 10 or at 12 to 18 with other people's picks. So, you know, like this is the year to be like, I'm going to cash in a couple of my picks to either move up. Like, wouldn't it be crazy if Sam took 12 and two other picks and moved up to, I don't know, six? And then he traded Dort for eight and another future pick. Like, crazy, bro, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that could be an insane moment for this team, because then we picked up two top 10 picks in a very, very loaded draft. So there's going to be a lot of movement here, guys. And I don't think that, you know, I think that there's going to be one of those moments where everybody looks back and says, like, you know, eight first-round trades, you know, nine first-round trades. Like, that was crazy. Because...
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we're ready for it. I really don't. I think that this is going to be one of those moments where when we're live and we're showing, you know, talking about the draft with you guys and seeing it firsthand, it's going to be like ding 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 and another trade, you know, and it's just going to be crazy because teams are going to be trying to drop as much salary as possible. They're going to be calling teams like the Wizards that's been dying to win, or teams like Minnesota that's been dying to win, trying to trade any of the players that they possibly can just for salary relief, guys. You know, I mean, fuck picks right now. Let's shed $45 million off of our salary. Like, that's the way it's going to be. It's going to be constant all offseason long. The second the new CBA kicks in and the second they can start signing players. Like, everybody's talking about free agents. Free agents, there could be one or two free agents that are going to be signed. Everything else is going to go stale. It's going to go stop. Because trades are going to be what's going to be people looking at. Because the top teams that need to be able to sign new free agents, better free agents, right? They're not going to be able to touch them unless they shed salary. So everything stops until teams can shed salary. So it's going to get crazy. I mean, like, draft night is going to be crazy. And the Oklahoma City Thunder are in the perfect position because there's like five teams ahead of them that are having salary cap crunches. You know, and Oklahoma City has, what, $32 million in free room? So bring it on. Let's see what happens.
So, you know, like, whenever there are those teams that have, like, North Carolina or Kentucky, where everybody knows, like, this guy's the best player on the team, and this guy's the second best player, and really what happens is you end up with a guy like Shea, who's, I think he was the third player picked on his team that year. I know Kevin Knox was picked in front of him, yeah. But maybe he was the second. But in the end, there are some guys that aren't the best player on these teams. So when you look at like the G League Ignite, they've got three players that are going to go in the first round. You look at the French team, you got maybe six players that are going to go in the first round. And it's, you're like,
it's amazing.
It's easy to ignore individuals. So with City, Suzuko, what everybody needs to do, if you got the chance right now, watch him film from his G League time and tell us what you think. Not about him as he fits into the draft class, right? But him as a player, what he could end up being. Because to me, what I see is something that is, he's either very likely to be an absolute star because of his height and his ability, right? Or
yeah,
it's fool's gold, and I'm missing something that is like a fatal flaw that will make it so he's not going to be a star. So I'd love to hear what other people have to say about his game, and we'll see what happens. Now, we got the finals coming up, bro.
Tonight.
Game three.
Game three, bro.
All right. You said last time that you're going Miami.
Dude, Miami just got it, bro. Like, I think
the Nuggets are going to get it, bro.
No, Miami, the thing about Miami that I love is that they're like bed bugs. You know what I'm saying? Like, when they get in your bed and they get in your head, it's fucked. Like, every single time you lay down someplace, if you have bed bugs, I've never had bed bugs. Well, no, I take that back.
One time
back out, in my shitty ass apartment in Oklahoma City. Remember that place, man?
Mm-hmm.
I got bed bugs. I burned motherfucking everything. Anyways, every time you lay down, you think you have bed bugs. You lay on the couch, you're like, fucking bed bugs, right? Like, it's just in your head. And I think the way that Miami has really portrayed everything and made it difficult for Denver to think about what's going on, right, is a problem for Denver. They're in their heads. And in order for Denver to be able to pull this out, they got to come back with a ferocious desire to win. And I just don't know if Miami is going to let them do that because, you know, Eric is just a next level coach at this moment. I mean, what he's been able to do is spectacular. So maybe I'm wrong, but I'm, you know, Miami at this point, just, I mean, on every stretch of the imagination, they just fucked up Denver in every possible way in their head. Like, Denver's like re-guessing what they ate before dinner the night before. I mean, like, everything. It's crazy, man. Like, we've all been there when a team that you should beat beats you and you're like, what did I do wrong? How could I have played better? And when you're at that point and you've never been to this level and this much pressure before, and Jimmy has been here before. The Heat have been here before and they dropped the ball. So this time around, it's different. I mean, this is different. Jimmy is on a mission, doesn't give a shit about anything except for winning that trophy. And that's scary when you have a, you know, solely minded player like that.
If Miami wins, the series feels like it's almost over.
Oh, it won't be, though. This is a 7-game series, bro. It might be over in six. It might be over in six, but this is going full seven.
My guess is Miami wins in six. But
I mean, Miami in six is the way that Miami wins the series. Because if it's got to go back to Denver, that's going to be game seven in Denver. Bro, I would rather, if I was the Miami Heat, I would rather just like get all my like dick hair pulled, you know, plucked out. Because that would be like pure torture, man. I couldn't.
Here's my prediction, though. I think Denver wins.
Denver people are fucking psycho, bro.
I think Denver wins tonight. But Miami wins in six.
All right.
So
you think so?
Yeah, I think they take the lead and then they go 1-2-3 game series over.
Series over after that.
Yeah. Damn. They win in Miami, tie it up.
I look at it.
Go to Denver, win it, and they're like, we got to finish this in Miami in six, and so it's over.
I think you got Miami in six, Miami in five, but Denver in seven.
I agree.
I don't think you can. I mean, I could be wrong, and Jimmy
comes
out.
I would love to see a game seven in Denver.
I mean, look what he did in Boston, Game 7.
Game 7 in Denver would be a pretty special day. Pretty special memory. Yeah, so, dude. That's what we're all cheering for.
Dude, imagine the city if they won Game 7 in Denver. Like,
I would fly
the
in
fucking
just,
city
like,
down, bro.
Riot with the rioters, man.
Oh, my God, dude. It would be like weed heaven. You know the dispensaries be giving out the free weed.
Yeah, dude, like all this smoke.
Hand it out!
All this smoke in the air right now, dude. It's like
From Canada. Thank you, Canada.
That's what would be leaving Colorado. That's what would be.
No, but it would
Colorado.
Be all natural marijuana smoke.
I mean, but it would be a cloud they could see from space.
Dude, it would be like going to a concert at the Red Rocks. Remember that?
Yeah, dude.
The Red Rocks concert where we got there, we're sitting in the crowd, and all of a sudden, Portugal the Man starts playing, and all of a sudden, you see this big puff of smoke just go. And Mark and I looked at each other like, did someone start a fire? And the people next to us were
small fires.
Incredibly high. They start passing us blunts, and we start passing blunts. It was before COVID, obviously, but it was the most amazing
Red Rock.
Concert
Red
ever.
Rock. Good times. Classic.
I remember.
Times. Portugal, the Man, has an album coming out in 2 weeks, guys.
I know, dude. Did you see that song I sent you the other day?
Yeah.
Yeah, dude. That's pretty amazing. They finally are back, stuff. Bro. Got a little bit of saxophone in there. Mm.
Took too long, but here we are. We're back.
Well, I supported their shirt yesterday, bro.
Yeah, dude.
Portugal. All about that.
I'm pumped. Join us again. We're going to be back Friday. Tomorrow, I'm moving places again. Going to head down to Virginia.
Cool. Friday, and then Saturday, we should be able to knock one out before I'm going to be doing something on Saturday and Sunday.
Cool. So. Yeah, if we can do it Saturday. If not, hopefully we'll get back
if
in the
not,
flow.
If not, then we'll take the weekend off and just chill, you know?
Hit up Monday. So whatever, guys. Keep your notifications turned on so we can
click
ding your bell.
Click that click, dude.
We'll see you next time.